Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport. And at the moment, on middle Sunday of the US Open, Kyle Edmund is having a bit of a difficult experience because he is two sets to love down and two love with a breakdown against a world number one in Novak Djokovic, who looks like the world number one Novak Djokovic tonight. Catherine Whittaker.
He looks like a world number one, yeah, that's certainly benefiting from the rest he's had. Yeah, we've been speculating for the last few days about what effect those two, well, the one withdrawal and the one retirement, would have on him. And I think all that speculation is pretty much ended because, yeah, he's back to being the world number one. I think it's fair to say that he's not being massively tested. Not to say that there hasn't been the odd point where Kyle Edmund hasn't shown what he can do, but I think it's fair to say he's not, with the greatest of respect, risen to the occasion. I think he looks a bit overawed. You know, he's not able to do it on any kind of consistent basis, clearly. And I don't know. I actually thought, and watched him during the warm up, the knock up on the, and I thought, wow, he looks really pumped and looks like he believes. But then suddenly, as soon as the match actually started, that seemed to ebb away very, very quickly. I'm not sure. There's a difference. I actually asked him this after his last win and said, you know, loads of players in your position say, yeah, I believe. Or, you know, they usually say it in the third person, don't they? You've got to believe. You know, there's no point going on the court if you don't believe in all of that. But there's a difference between saying that and telling yourself that and really deep down believing it. And for me, that's it. You know, he's gone onto the court thinking, yeah, I've got to believe I can win this.
But that, really? to me, that's not the reason that this is happening. To me, the reason this is happening is because Djokovic is one of the greatest players of all time, and he's showing that right now. He is carving Edmund up. There is nothing Edmund can do right now. He's had a couple of points where he's absolutely hammered that forehand, and it wouldn't have been retrieved by a Concorde going after it. But the vast majority of them, he's just been carved apart because the guy knows how to play tennis. He knows how to construct points and put the ball in areas of the court that players like Kyle Edmund, who have a couple of major weapons, he can't use them. He's blunting his weapons. He's constructing rallies in a way. I mean, Federer used to do it. Federer would put the ball in horrible places of the court with all sorts of spins and manipulations. I think it sometimes gets overlooked how good the guy is at actually doing that, because it's not necessarily as flamboyant as the way Federer would do it. He's really, really difficult to play as a match player. There's no weakness, but there's also a great awareness of where to stick the ball. And I think it's too much for Kyle at the moment. And I think it'd be too much for just about anybody. Maybe one or two other players in the world could compete with this.
Yes, yeah, it's decision making, isn't it? Tennis IQ. It's making the right decisions. I'm just rephrasing exactly what you've just said. I'm agreeing with it. It's funny, he doesn't. I just sat for a few games courtside, right next to his box, in fact, and sort of the considering how brilliantly he's playing and how the position he's in the match, which is a completely dominant one, he doesn't look that happy, actually. His body language, there's some very poignant looks up to the box, you know, if this is his idea of perhaps not quite playing up to what he thinks he has in him, then that's worrying signs for everyone else.
Yeah, well, I'd say Djokovic has sent out a statement to everybody in the draw who's left and everybody in the world tonight that it's time to stop worrying about his wrist. It's time to stop worrying about his mind and worrying where his focus might be, and remembering that he won this title last year and he won four Grand Slam titles in a row. I even think there's a little statement going on to Andy Murray at the moment, because he knows Murray will be watching this, because it's his mate and it's his teammate who's playing, and it's the guy who beat Serbia more or less single-handedly in the Davis Cup, and Djokovic is just reminding everybody.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Andy will without question be watching this. He was definitely late for press yesterday because he was watching Dan Evans, so definitely he'll be somewhere, probably in his hotel room in New York, watching this, and of course Djokovic will know that.
Just think, we might have to re-record this whole thing if Edmund mounts the most miraculous of comebacks and somehow gets the win. But anyway, that sounds unlikely, certainly at this point. What else has happened today? Let's go in back match by match, and the one we've just had in the evening session between Angelique Kerber and Petra Kvitova was pretty spectacular, wasn't it? But Kerber winning through, taking some of the best of what Kerber had to offer after a pretty erratic start to the match. And Kerber just carries on building her reputation.
She looks so strong, doesn't she? I mean, I know she's always looked strong and fit and capable and all the rest of it, but she looks even more so with every match. I'm struck by it more and more. Just by the by, I'm seeing on the monitor up here Djokovic receiving some treatment on the court by the looks of things to the right. Is it the tricep again? Anyway.
Edmund has just broken back for 2-1.
The comeback is on. We will be re-recording, or at least recording a supplement, if the wholly unlikely happens. It looks to be the forearm. We're just getting a close-up. It's either the elbow.
It's the same sort of thing that he was having done the other night, isn't it, when he played Jerzy Janowicz, and he's having his whole shoulder and elbow and it's being turned in around in circles, it seems to me, and that doesn't make much sense. But anyway, he's having his right arm treated. That's all we do know.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a lovely relaxing massage, let's put it that way. What were we talking about, Kerber? Yeah, I mean, she just looks so strong and just, God, I wouldn't want to mess with her. She just looks really, really good. I know Kvitova is hit and miss and hasn't had the best year, but she's dangerous, and she showed flashes of being dangerous tonight, and Kerber just snuffed it out at every turn. I really think we're on for the Serena Kerber final.
Yeah, we could well be. I've not had the greatest day of old predictions. Last night, I think I said Kvitova to win that one. I think I said Jack Sock to beat Joe Wilfried Tsonga. What on earth was I thinking? That'll teach me to do off-the-cuff predictions. But anyway, we won't be doing that tonight. But anyway, before that, we had the story of the day, arguably the story of the week. Rafael Nadal losing in a final set tiebreak to Luca Puy. Henri Leconte marked my card, didn't he? And my goodness, that guy was good. What a talent he is.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, could I just say final set tiebreak, brilliant. An advert for one today. I mean, I was so delighted that match got to reach that climax. It just felt so fitting, and I just thought, wow, yes, for fifth set tiebreaks at that moment. But we've had that debate before, so we won't go into the specifics of the argument, but today was an advert for it. Luca Puy, I mean, I think we've talked about him a little bit, but probably not as much as we should have done. He had a sort of good clay court season, semi-finals in Rome, and then first round of the French Open, and I remember seeing him in the press conference there, and he was absolutely gutted, you know, really, really thought that was his moment to make the Grand Slam breakthrough, and of course he would have wanted to do it at home, but it turns out it's come here, and you can understand why. I the impression I get is that actually the French press have become a bit frustrated with him, because he's obviously so talented, and he was talked about a few years ago. He's all of 22 now, but I think he was being talked about when he was 18, 19, and then has stuttered a bit. But that's the pattern, isn't it? That's the pattern in men's tennis now. So you first catch a glimpse of someone, 17, 18, maybe 19, you think, oh, yeah, they're going to be the next big thing. But it actually takes 3 or 4 years for them to really become the next big thing. And, God, I mean, that backhand, the backhand down the line, but just the backhand in general, he practically half volleys it for a winner half the time. I mean, and his temperament, he was the star of the show today against a pretty nifty Rafael Nadal. And that, I mean, to find myself 24 hours on from Evans Wawrinka saying that was the match of the tournament, I didn't think I'd be saying that, certainly not so soon anyway.
No, I'd say this for me, having come here for the 14th time now, this is the best 6-7 days of a Grand Slam that I think I can ever remember. I think this has just been stunning from day after day. It is hard, though, to see Nadal lose like that, I think. I mean, I chuffed that it's a guy like Puig who has such brilliance, and I interviewed him afterwards for BBC Radio 5 Live, and it's the first time I've had a chance to speak to him. Only 3 questions, but a really charming guy, really softly spoken, but interesting, very good English, actually. And he was a credit to himself, very respectful of Nadal. But it's not easy seeing a great champion like that who is on the cusp of doing something again and then not being able to and coming up short, frankly. He was very close and he got himself back to 6-6 in that tie break, and then he frankly blew it on a big forehand, didn't he?
Big forehand, yeah, and the reaction on that forehand was amazing. I was sitting in the photographer's pit, and every photographer, there were only a couple that got the shot of that brief moment where he put both heads.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hands to his forehead and practically clasped his face in his hand. There are a couple that got the shot, and they looked down at their cameras in glory and amazement, but then the rest of them missed it, and that was the shot. It was, I mean, yes, he's an expressive player on the court, but you don't usually see that moment of, oh my God, I've blown it. And that's what that was. It gave rise, he'd just saved, as you say, the 3 match points, and then that gave rise to the match point, which Puig finally took. He's fantastic. Such a torn crowd. I mean, to be taking positives for a 14-time Grand Slam champion from reaching the second week of a slam sounds a bit pitiful, really, I suppose. But it is the first time he's been in the second week of a slam since French Open last year. So, yeah, I know he's 30, but, you know, if he's thinking in terms of if he thinks he's got a few years left at having a crack at this, I suppose it is a comeback, there have been so many, then I suppose the trajectory is upward. It's just how
certainly the form is.
Has he got long enough to continue the upward trajectory to where he needs to go before age starts taking over? I don't know. But
I would certainly say his form is better. Well, one interesting question that came out of the press conference, he was asked, I think by Ben Rothenberg, he was asked about pressure in those moments at Grand Slams as opposed to other events and that sort of thing. And Nadal kind of snapped a little bit at that. He got a little angry, a little sort of irritable about the question, and pointed out that he's won 14 slams and pressure, what pressure, that kind of thing. And then there was one comment, I think, by Michael Russell, the very good American tennis ex-pro, who said, you know, what are you asking him about that for? I mean, I think it's a perfectly legitimate question, and I also think that as players age, you often see players struggle with nerves a bit more. I don't know whether that happened to Nadal.
We've seen it from Federer, the greatest of all time.
We've certainly seen it from Leighton Hewitt in the last 2 years of his career. He would often be in very, very healthy winning positions, and he would not win. Now, sometimes, obviously, that's to do with his opponent. Sometimes it's technical. But actually, I think I could make the case for quite a few of those losses being due to the nerve going a little bit. And a lot of players I've spoken to, ex-players, have said that when you get older and you see your own mortality a little bit, your nerve does go a little bit.
Look, I can understand why Nadal snapped. I think he quite often does that. He quite often does a snappy initial response to a question, sort of bats it away, and then starts talking and goes into real depth and gives you a really good response. That's almost sort of his default. He says, "Oh no," and then goes into a bit of depth and backtracks a bit. So, look, I can understand why he snapped a bit, but I also think that's quite a legitimate question given. I mean, there are a few moments that you could cite, but certainly that forehand. I mean, how else do you explain that forehand from a 14-time Grand Slam champion? But nerves and tension and the moment. It's entirely understandable to suggest that anybody... I mean, if you know, being a great champion makes you impervious to all of that, then it sort of makes it all completely boring, doesn't it? I mean, Djokovic talked about... You know, at the French Open, the nerves he felt serving out the match there. That's what makes it interesting. If you just think, oh, you know, this is all easy for them, it's boring, isn't it?
Gael Monfils went through today and has not dropped a set. He's won 12 sets out of 12. He's now going to face Luca Puy in the next round. So he rolls onwards. Catherine?
Yannick Noah, Davis Cup captain, who I spoke to earlier, is not going to watch that match, even on the TV. Well, actually, he said he flew in. I'm not sure where he lives. Presumably in France somewhere. He said he flew in just to watch Puy today, and he had to cut our interview short because he had a plane to catch. He did just fly in for that match. And he said, I thought he was sort of half joking when he said he wouldn't watch Monfils Puy, and it turned out he really wasn't joking. He said he couldn't bear to watch it. It's like my two kids playing one another. I wish it wasn't happening. I was trying to point out the positive, you know, guaranteed Frenchman in the semi-final. He wasn't having any of it. He thinks it's a disaster.
Catherine, it's two games all, an advantage Edmund on the Djokovic serve. He's got break point. Anyway, this is happening, folks. This is happening. Who knows? We may be... that first 5 minutes when I was banging on about Djokovic being back, maybe it was all nonsense. I'll find out soon, won't I, when I wrap this up at the end. Before that, Johanna Konter from Great Britain, she had a tough day today, lost in straight sets.
Oh, that was a weird match. Yeah, tough day, weird match. Like, it's a very odd thing being that first match on Louis Armstrong court, especially when you've got Gael Monfils against Bagdatis on grandstand.
Edmund's broken for 3-2.
This is never going to air, is it? We're going to have to re-record post-Edmund comeback. I'm just going to press on as if people are listening to this. Yeah, you've got Monfils Bagdatis, which was standing room only over on grandstand. You know, the New Yorkers take their time to filter into the Arthur Ashe Stadium, even if there's an absolute corker going on. And I think it's fair to say that Konter Sevastova was not a corker. I mean, it was a tension-ridden affair. As I say, the atmosphere on those opening matches on Ashe, particularly with the new roof, where even when it's open, the acoustics are a bit odd. Like, it's just a slightly strange atmosphere. And the whole match, certainly in the opening stages, felt a bit strange. Konter went love three down, then came back, and you thought, OK, she's going to really start playing now. And then the tension got her again. She refused to admit any kind of nerves playing a factor in the post-match press conference. I know that's what we've come to expect from Konter, her not wanting to give anything away, her wanting to maintain this bubble around her. But I did kind of just think, come on. That she said in post-match, she said, I did the best I could today and I left everything out there. And well, if that's the best, I mean, quite obviously, we know Jo Konta can play better than that.
I think she hit the wall. I think she's hit the wall. I think Sevastova played very well. I think she was clever. She put the ball in difficult bits of the court and she messed her around, stopped her being able to be metronomic in quite the same way. But I think Konta's on fumes right now. If you look at the run she's had, Stanford won the title, Montreal, quarterfinals, flies to Rio, quarterfinals, Cincinnati, a couple of rounds, and now into the last 16. She hasn't had a week off since Wimbledon.
Bad scheduling, then. She's 13th seed. She needs to be peaking at this stage.
I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. This is her trying to get up in the rankings right now. Tell me which one of those tournaments she shouldn't have played.
I agree with you, actually, but then it's the Dominic Thiem scenario, isn't it? Adjusting your schedule for your new ranking, but then, you know, schedules are set a year in advance, and, you know,
I think you can cut her slack, A, because this is her first proper year on the tour, and B, it's an Olympic year. She had to play the Olympics. She also probably felt she had to play those other tournaments in order to get the points she's actually ended up getting that have put her outside the top 10. I think it's fair enough.
I'm not criticising. Maybe I am criticising. I just think it's a... I just wish she'd admitted more what a great... I mean, come on. That must have been an enormous disappointment not to be able to play anywhere close to her best on that stage. It must have been...
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. But you know, the majority... not everybody's like Dan Evans and says to you, you know, anybody who doesn't think about winning when they're a couple of points away is full of it. Not everybody's like that. Not everybody's deadpan and will just drop it on you. I think Konta has to behave like this in order to feel comfortable. I don't think she feels comfortable telling everybody how disappointed she is, so she doesn't. She does it that way. And I just think it's circumstances coming together, but I do think she's pretty exhausted.
I get it. It's just frustrating.
It is a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
There we are.
I can't
win them all.
And I get it more during a tournament when you're in the bubble. She's, you know, I get the whole one match at a time, don't want to look ahead, don't want to look behind, but... I almost feel sort of when you're out of the tournament, when the bubble has burst, maybe then you can let it go a bit and let people in a bit. But it works for her, doesn't it? This approach works for her, so I can't knock it. It's just frustrating for us.
Indeed. We like it when tennis players tell us everything, you know, let us into their deepest, darkest secrets, because that's what we're all about. It's break point. Again now for Djokovic to level at 3-3. There's your little update, Catherine Whittaker. We'll just have a little look at the schedule. That sounds to me, that crowd cheering, sounds to me like Carl Edmund has just saved that break point. Because you kind of tell how things are going by the sound of crowds, can't you, at times?
Can I mention, Roberta Vinci won again today.
She's flying. She's going to win it this year.
She's going to go one step further. I've predicted a Serena Kerber final. So in my universe, that can't happen. But I just thought that needed a mention.
It does. So tomorrow is going to be Arthur Ashe Stadium, starting off at 4 p.m. UK time, 11 o'clock Eastern time in the States. Dominic Thiem against Juan Martín Del Potro. Memo to line judges, wear body armour. Then we've got Pliskova, Williams, Serena against Shvedova, and then we've got Dimitrov against Murray in the evening session. I, folks, have got to go. Work calls, but it's been lovely to talk to you all, and if something dramatic happens with Edmund and Djokovic, I'll come back and tell you all about it. Otherwise, assume Djokovic is through. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.